them. I cannot charge down anything without his permission. That drove me crazy. I still wanted the food.
Sorry, Scott.
So, you know, because I still wanted the food very much. But I came home noticeably heavier, quite heavier. And my doctor put me on my first diet. I was about 10 years old. And, you know, I did for the approval. You know, I wanted my parents, you know, in their meaning way, wanted, you know, me to do things certain ways. And I wanted their approval. And they couldn't really give it because they just, I realize now, they just didn't know how to do that. But I didn't realize it then. I was young. And even when I was older, I just couldn't always notice it. And I held the resentment for them being too strict, being too overbearing. You know, the Jewish thing, guilt, to try and get me to do things, and I just didn't have that understanding. So I had a lot of the resentments and a lot of the anger, and while taking it out on them didn't do any good, the food helped me quite a bit. Quite a bit. But my doctor put me on my first diet. It was 3 meals a day and nothing in between, or maybe a snack, like a fruit. And now I'm looking back, and that seems very familiar, only it wasn't a program-wise, it was just a way of eating. And I lost the weight because I wanted the approval, and I did not have the willingness to do it myself, for myself. I found out years later when I did something because I wanted to do it, such as, you know, watching my food, going to school, I did a lot better when I didn't have to worry about anything else. And of course, when we went away for the summer, my parents were not watching me, we were at a hotel, the food was there, and of course the weight came back. And I forgot about anything else, about the approvals. And I went on simply gaining the weight, and the food does a number on you. I know in the big book, in the doctor's opinion, they say with that food allergy, and it does, for me, or the alcohol allergy, for me it was the food, that it gets into my, it gives me the cravings. And it gets into where I kept eating more and more, and I just didn't want to stop at all. You know, I wanted the easy way out. I kept wishing it would go away, but wishing doesn't work. There is no magic. There is no magic to it, and that's all I wanted. And my parents kept harping on me, and the more they would harp, the more I would eat. I would be sneaky. I would sneak up. You know, I would run home from school to get home before my parents would, so I could start eating the food. I got to stealing money from my mother's pocketbook so I could get food. And even starting to lie about it, when I started to have lunches in school, my parents would give me some money to get something to drink, and I spent it on food. I figured, they're never going to find out. They're at work, I'm here. How are they going to find out? So somebody actually saw me, and they mentioned it to my parents. So I lied, and they said, I'm usually a little more hungry. So they gave me a little bit more money, only I learned to buy the food with the extended amount and just go off the property so I could hide and eat. And that's all I wanted to do. And I kept gaining the weight and not doing well in school. And I just didn't have the coping skills to really try and handle it. My parents made me ashamed I had the problem. And they sent me to a therapist, but I did not have what it takes to be honest. I kept talking about anything but the actual issues. And after a while, when somebody said, is he going to a psychiatrist, I felt such shame in it that I just decided I did not want to go anymore. And my parents could not, you know, convince me to continue it. They said, just go for a little while longer and we'll talk about it. I knew that day would never come. So this is one of the few times I really stuck up for myself. I just stopped going. But of course, the problems were still there. Like I said, my teachers would say, you know, he's a smart person, you know, he's doing well, but he could do a lot better. And of course the food clouds your thinking, and it gets you to where you can't really concentrate on what you're supposed to do, and nobody really knew about it at the time. I was getting into the big numbers, going from a children's store to an Army and Navy store, and eventually in my teenage years, having to go to a big man store, and eventually to just a catalog through a mail order, because I was getting to such weights. My first successful diet, you know, I must have been about 22. It was a commercial plan, and it was like an eater's delight because you could binge out on anything you want, the low-calorie stuff and everything else, and you still lost the weight. And it was like a star there. I walked into that room. I was a little over 400 pounds, and I was doing well because I could binge all I want and still lose the weight, and that's all I wanted. That's what counts. You know, my... It was drummed into me, just lose the weight and you'll be happy. You know, you'll be able to complete school, you'll get married or whatever else. But somehow that was never to be, because there were no tools to cope with any of it, to cope with life, the stress and the disappointments and anything else. I just refer to the food. But I did well. But I still wasn't about to be honest with the food. When I started to go back and gain the weight, I lost about 127 pounds, and then I started to gain the weight back. And I kept saying, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I knew what I was doing wrong. I was just going off and having anything I want, the amounts. And the lecturer would say, here's a food diary. Fill it out and bring it back to me next week. He never got the diary. I wasn't about to be honest, so I stuck to the plan. I had some nice weight losses. And it kept going back in a vicious cycle. No honesty. And my parents kept yelling at me to stay on the plan, and which never worked. The more they yelled, the more resistance I had to staying on anything. And I learned now you cannot treat this diet-wise. My date, I wanted to go out with women. I wanted to date. And I had such poor self-esteem, I figured, who's going to want to go out with a person my size? I mean, I had friends, I was fortunate to have friends who didn't care about the weight. I could not transfer that to dating. And I had very few. I couldn't figure there were anybody who did go out with me on a date. So it was like just to be nice, sort of like a mercy date. And, I didn't realize it until years later. And when I finally start to lose a lot of weight again, really stick with it, I start to get like the dry promises. I was able to go back to school. A longtime friend was back in the city, and I asked her out, and eventually led to me getting married. And now I had a very nice benefit of being married. Not only can I lie to my parents about the food, I got a chance to lie to her too about it. And she knew my history. We knew each other for quite some time before ever going out. And, she was one of the few people who actually didn't care about the fact that I was heavy. In fact, she said she went on a visit to New York. She said she would have stayed with me had I said something, but I was too shy to say anything. Like I said, the honesty was not there. So now, at least, I was able to say something. But she knew me back and forth. Now, when I was at this time, I switched jobs about a year into the marriage. I was working nights, midnight to 8, and I on the way in, I would take my dinner with me, but I would stop off at these hot food bars, get something, bring it in. I was working with one other person, we were in different rooms, so nobody really saw what I did. I would bring the stuff out in the middle of the night, about 3 o'clock in the morning, throw the stuff out so nobody would see it, and I figured, I'm outside already, I might as well get a refill. And I came back, and it was a vicious cycle every single day. I was even going down the hall to where they had a refrigerator, and I was starting to steal the food there, little bits at a time, hoping not to get caught, until one day I went in there, and I opened the refrigerator, and there was a note there that said, why don't you stick to your own food? And then I figured, now that should have been the end of it, since I was caught, but I just learned to be a little more careful. I wasn't about to give in to it. And I kept gaining the weight, and it kept interfering with our marriage. We couldn't go away on vacations. Trying to get into a seat, like behind the, in a booth, if we went out to dinner or in a movie theater. I kept having to move up so I could just sit on the edge. I wouldn't move back to the armrests. And, try getting clothes in a big way and store, there's hardly anything there, and I had to go up there, and it cost a fortune. I was spending a fortune, not just on the food, but the clothes too. So, and eventually, my wife, who knew about the 12 steps from a previous marriage, she said, there was a neighbor who was familiar with Overeaters Anonymous. They shared with me, I wouldn't share back, and she sort of pushed me to go into OA for a while, and I went again just to please her. And I went for a few months. I was just sat there with a lump on the log. I mean, there was nothing wrong with this. I didn't find the steps or like higher power of God offensive. I just didn't want it. I didn't have the willingness. I had not hit the bottom yet. Until finally, I just got tired of the whole thing, and I started coming home after work. I figured she was at work. I'd be coming home. I got off at 8 o'clock in the morning, and she's never going to find out what I'm doing, I'm coming home. And she would say, how was your meeting? I go, fine. The person qualified in this, this, and that, but they were actually repeats of what I had heard before. And or if I went to a step meeting, I kept careful track of the steps so I knew which ones we were on and what I told her the last time. And I said, well, this is the steps we were going over and everything else. And so finally, like what happened with my parents, somebody said, I saw your husband coming home one morning. Was he supposed to be in a meeting? And he was shoving a candy bar in his mouth. And that blew the whole thing. And she was angry as anything, but felt that she could not do anything. I was not ready. I didn't want to give up anything. I had nothing to help me. You know, I was, you know, there was nothing out there for me, no support. And now I can look back, I was spiritually bankrupt. There was nothing there. But now she was in her own 12-step program, and somebody told me about a treatment center, you know, a rehab that could help you. I still wasn't ready, but I was very polite. I took the number. I said, thank you. I'll think about it. And I thought about it for about a second and a half, put the number in my wallet. Put the number in my wallet, said thank you, and that was it. Until finally one day, a couple of years later, I was sitting at the table. My weight had ballooned up to about 471 pounds. And I was sitting one morning, on a Tuesday morning, I had to go back to sleep because I had to go back to work that night. And I started to see myself as a thin person. And I realized the only way to do it is to do something about the food issues. The diets were not working. Somehow, that time in OA 6 years earlier had done something for me. At least it had planted the seeds. Unfortunately, it took 6 years to blossom, but it was there. And I pulled the number out. It's amazing. It had yellowed, it had fallen apart so much. That's amazing how I got the number right on the first try. And I called up, and I was desperate. I said, I'm 471 pounds, I can't do my job, my marriage and my life is suffering, I can't do anything else, and I need to come in. Well, we don't exactly have the room for you right now. Well, you're going to make the room, because I'm giving you a deadline, at which time I'm showing up at your doorstep. I was desperate, and I was pushing my way in. They said, fine, come in Monday. So I spoke to this, and then when my wife came home, she was amazed at the difference already, the fact that I had taken the honesty. And I was desperate, and finally hit that bottom. But she admitted later that she was scared at the same time because she knew there'd be changes. But at least they were positive changes. I got the time off from work. They said, I was told, allow at least 4 weeks. And once I got there, but there was no thought of OA, I just had to go in there to get a hold of my food issues. And when I got in there, they played a mean trick on me. When I got to the unit, first of all, they had to rearrange everything because I was the only man on the unit. And there was two posters there, one of the 12 steps and one of the 12 traditions. And I, mean trick, but nice anyway, because I knew I was home. And I had this sense of acceptance that I was home. And I would do whatever I had to. I did whatever they told me to do, and whatever I had to, even to the point where I was fighting for more time. The doctor said, well, we'll send you home, you come back as a day patient. I said, I'm not ready. He says, don't worry, you'll do fine. I said, I'm not ready, I want more time. Even though he says, you'll do fine. And I went against what the counselors told me, and I called up the insurance company. They said, right off the bat, you're covered. But from day one, when's he getting out? So I pushed for them more time, and the doctor finally, based on that, the doctor had to call them, and he had to lie to them. And when he came back, he said, what do you think will happen when you come out there, if you go home too early? Well, I know I'm going to start to binge, I'm not going to be able to stop, and what happens if that happened? I might as well just end it right here. Why should I waste all that time doing it? I'll get an immediate result. And I knew where he was coming from, where he was trying to lead me. He said that's exactly what he told the insurance company, that if you went home, he'd be suicidal. And that got me an extra 2 weeks. And then when the 2 weeks were up, I was ready to come home. And the aftercare was, you go back to OA. And I came back to the meeting that I started with originally, that 6 years before, because I would get off at 8 o'clock on a Saturday morning. It was only six blocks up from where I used to work. And I went to the meetings, and right away, and they started talking about the tools and everything. One of them was it was abstinence at that time, which is now plan of eating, which I had already, but also they spoke about service. And I was just sitting there, not really thinking about taking on service, and someone nominated me to be the treasurer. They probably saw something in me that I didn't see in myself to take on the job. And that was one of the nicest gifts I've gotten, because that started me on the service itself. I did it, and I felt a bond of just staying within the program and coming back every week. I started doing service even at other meetings, whatever I could do, whether it was setting up chairs, talking to people, even just showing up as a form of service. And I was already hooked. But I took on a sponsor, and haphazardly I was talking, working with the steps, but it was haphazard. You know, it wasn't really what I should have been doing. And I still had that little pink cloud with me, and it lasted for a little over a year, because whenever my first crisis came up, you know, my first real crisis, I was able to deal with the stress of work and other things, even my marriage. The first real crisis I had, I did not reach out. I didn't reach out, I didn't refer to the steps, a higher power, or even call my sponsor or anybody else. I was just trying to handle it on my own. You know, our marriage was, I'm divorced now, but our marriage was really on the rocks, and we had been away on a mini vacation, and I had gone back to work one Sunday, and I thought things were looking up. And my wife had said, well, don't call me when you get to work, I'm going to be sleeping, or when you get up, because I'm very tired. And I thought something was there, but I didn't say anything. I was too innocent. When I came back in the morning, there was a note there that said, first of all, he says, you could do better than me. And second, stick to what you're doing. You look so good. And I thought she left. You know, physically, she got up, and, you know, she packed the things, and she left. And something told me to check the room, the bedroom. She was there with an empty bottle of pills and an empty liquor bottle. It was an attempted suicide, and I felt I was still holding my own, but I still sort of started to have things fall apart. I knew enough to dial 911, to call for an ambulance, and to get over to a hospital. I was running around that day, you know, tried to handle anything. I don't even know how many trips I had to do between the hospital and my house, like to get certain papers or to get the pills that she was on medication for and the whole bit. She was in a coma for 3.5 days. And when she woke up that Thursday morning, she was, for someone who was always so very organized, she was very, very confused. And, you know, everything was full. And I literally broke down crying because I just couldn't handle it. And even then, I would not reach out. Sure enough, physically in the hospital, I was starting to binge. On the way over there, a little grocery, they had cookies there, 3 for $1. What could be the harm? Believe me, it did a lot of harm because I was off to the races again, but not going to admit that I was in relapse. I knew it, but I wouldn't even admit it to myself. Until finally one day somebody nominated me to lead a meeting, and I finally had to admit that I was in relapse. You know, that's one thing I couldn't do, to lie to that extent. And my wife kept asking me, are you in relapse? I kept saying no, until we got on the New York City subway. There was a small seat there for 2 people, and we could no longer fit. And I had to admit there. And no matter what happened, I could not get myself back to anything. And eventually, I gained so much weight that our marriage did fall apart. We separated and later divorced. And my job, I had such poor hygiene. It was, you know, I pushed myself to do the work, but I had such poor hygiene that I couldn't work with people anymore. And that's really, you know, and they thought that I did not want to go on to disability. And I was just giving off mixed messages. I realized now, the only thing was, how would they support myself in disability? And so they outright fired me. And I could not do anything about it. There were too many legal loopholes to do anything. So I had to go on disability. And no matter what, I just couldn't get myself back. But the one thing is, I kept coming back to the rooms. And during all that time, I was angry. I sometimes, you know, flew off the handle of things. I was just not acting rational at all because I had nothing there. But before I was fired, I realized my job was suffering. So I went to a rehab the second time, but only to save the marriage and the job. Of course, it didn't work because I went, but no willingness. And it just didn't work. So now I'm on disability, eating and doing anything I wanted, which was not the right thing, but I always stuck to the rooms. Now, my mother had passed away in my first recovery. I came through the period of shiver fine. But now, you know, depending on my father, he kept saying, why don't you go for the gastric bypass or the lap band? Now, I moved back to the Bronx because, you know, I could no longer afford the apartment. My father was pushed into setting me up with an apartment back where he, near where he lived. He wanted me to live with him, but I knew I couldn't live with him. So, and, you know, his girlfriend must have done some number if he's separate, if he's separating himself for his money, from his money like that. But it was fine, and I got into that apartment near him, and I was, little did I know how much of a blessing that would be. And eventually became housebound because I was getting too heavy. I was going out to get anything I wanted. And when I couldn't get out of the house as often, it was painful because of the weight, I would start ordering in. You know, one day from Chinese, one day from the Italian place. I would keep going back and forth between it. I mean, they got to know me. All I would only have to call up and say hello. They know the phone number. They know my address. You know, and they, that's all they did. And I was ordering in every day, spending a fortune, and always running short, and asking my father for money. And that's all I could really do. And then finally, when I wanted to get into a treatment center again, based on a friend that was in there, and it worked pretty well, they wouldn't take me in because they said, I was in rehab twice, the chances for success are nil, it will not happen. But we will give you the gastric, but we will pay for gastric bypass. I said, no, thank you. I had enough recovery to know that it's not in my cards. I mean, I used to be very judgmental about it, but I realized if other people had it, it's their choice. Sometimes it could be they have to have it medically, it's necessary, and that's fine, but it's not for me. And then the doctors couldn't understand why. They kept pushing for it, my father, because I'll still obsess about the food. I'll still want it. We'll find ways to do it. I mean, I realize people who have had it have shared, you know, they ground things up, they have a lot of little ground up meals at one, you know, or whatever else, they'll find a way, and I resisted it. And like I said, the doctors kept pushing, and they don't know why I would do it. And so finally, one day, and then the insurance guy got me a scooter, which was fine, it broke the isolation. The only problem is, I was going out for more, you know, for the cheaper binge foods, because I had that scooter. Now, fast forward, my sister lost her husband in January of 2002, and 2 weeks later, my father got sick, he had a heart attack. And as heavy as I was running up to the hospital with him, for him, I was taking more care of him than I was of myself. You know, the heck with me, he needs my help. I wasn't doing the right thing, because I couldn't be there for myself. And now, if you fast forward 6 months later, he was in the hospital again for a month. Only this time I got word that this treatment center was willing to take me in. They had a spot. They'll try again with the insurance, but they were gambling a little bit, not knowing if the insurance would pay. And they said, all you have to do is, for right now, just pay for your medication and for your food. And it took me 24 hours to get up the courage to say yes. I went to my father, and he said, I have a chance to get into this treatment center, and something must have been watching over me. Right away he offered, he said, do you need the money to go down there right away? And that's a nice gift, because he was always a little insecure about the money. I said, yes. I went home. I got his girlfriend went upstairs and got me his credit card number. I had to make 2 seats on the plane down to Florida because of my size. I was now well over 500 pounds. I did that. I called them up, and they said, I'll be coming in on a Wednesday. On Wednesday, when they said, here's the flight number, they picked me up. And it was a helpless feeling being taken around both airports in a wheelchair. That's the first time, really, that I had no control over it. And I did not have control over the food. You know, everything was unmanageable. It couldn't even fall apart because it was never together to begin with. But the only kick was, first of all, I found out you learn to cook. I said, I can't cook. He says, you're sugar and flour free. I tell my friend, what am I going to do without my sandwiches? I'm taking care of a sick father, but I went down there. The night before, I got cold feet. Not that I was going to do with all that binge food. What was I going to do with all the free time now that I used for binging? What was I going to do with myself? That's what scared me. But I went down there because I knew how many people was trying, including this friend, was trying to help me. And I went down there. Probably the one time that being a people pleaser really helped, because it got me down there. And they gave me the food. They gave me a food plan. I made sure to get the book from them. You know, they just gave me the list of what I'm having to each meal. I got the list of the foods that were on there. I made sure to get that. And I was there for, they promised me 4 weeks. Now, with this friend who came down to see me and joined the group for a couple of days, I know mentioned something to them, and that got me, and that got me an extension of 2 weeks. I had to call up the airline to say, you know, to make another flight. I told my father I won't be home for another 2 weeks, and then I was extended one more time. The best gift was that I went from 4 to 8 weeks. That's exactly what was needed. And I look back, that was my higher power working for me. That spirituality was there for me, and in this recovery, it has grown. And I realize now, when I go through a situation, that higher power is here. I'm now feeling that higher power there when I never could before. But I've learned to put my own recovery first. And that's what I keep doing, and I keep telling other people to put their own recovery first. And I had my first test, fortunately, when I was there. My father had a 24-hour aid. And I found out from another relative that he was thinking of calling me up, telling me to cut my treatment short, and to come home to help him. Now, I was fortunate to find out ahead of time, so I wouldn't be surprised, but I knew, at the same time, I was telling myself, no way will I do that. This has to come first. And fortunately, another relative yelled at him enough to say, we won't do it. The minute he knew I was coming home for sure, he fired the aide, so I would be there for him. But at least this time, I was there with a clear mind. I was taking care of myself, I was looking out for my own recovery first, and now I could be there for him. In addition, as long as I was there for myself first, I came back, I went back to my meetings, I took on service as much as I possibly could at any of the meetings, and then I was asked to come back to intergroup. I'd been a rep on occasion before, but this time to be a region rep, I was asked. And it was a new experience, and that was my first experience above the group level, and I loved it. It helped, did me even more good to take on now on two levels, and it was really helping. I was doing all the service I can, and I was able to advance myself, and that higher power told you, you're sort of ready to go back to work. And little did I know that I was able to find a job through an off relative, it was my uncle's second wife who had passed away, my uncle passed away, and through my cousin who made the recommendation, I got a job doing payroll. But it was very stressful. I wasn't really ready to go back to work, and to do all that work, there was an overload of work. They only wanted one person to do it. My supervisor, as nice as she was a workaholic. So now I'm dealing with someone who should have been in another program. And now it's having its effect on me. I was feeling very stressful. I'm also dealing with a sick father. At that time, I was back in the hospital. And when I had to do all the work alone, I found out behind the scenes she was helping. I took the weekend to really think about it, to ask a higher power, what should I do? And that Monday I came in, and I resigned from the job. I said, it's not you, I like working here, I like with all the people, but it's just attacking the recovery that I'm making, it's attacking my health, and I cannot stay. But I did the right thing, I gave 2 weeks notice. And she said, no, today will be your last day. We will pay you for the next 2 weeks. Anyway, and that was a nice gift, and I left on good terms. And fortunately, the time was good. My higher power again was sticking up for me, because less than 2 weeks later, my father was gone. He had passed away. And I was literally there with my sister. I was there with him when he passed away. And the one thing that I had to do, and I was scared to do this, but I did this, was just before leaving, I went over to him, and I took the Star of David off. That was the only piece of jewelry he had, because I wanted it as that remembrance. The resentments that I have had for my parents were dwindling down, because I realized that they couldn't do any better, even though the intentions were there. And we came through the shiva again, and this time it was my turn to take care of myself. During the next, at the end of the year, I took care of with my weight loss, which was like approaching, which was well over 300 pounds now as a weight loss, I realized I was coming down to my goal weight. I knew how my recovery was. It was time to take care of the excess skin, which I did. I went through, it took me almost a year with all the procedures to that. And now I really felt it was time to go back to work. I really felt it was my turn. And that higher power again was guiding me. I had the physical recovery because of the fact that I was able to get around, get normal clothes. I was walking, I was amazed. I could walk 10 blocks in a space where maybe I could walk one block before. And I was in control of myself to where I was really raging, but I could handle things. So now I went back to work, and a spiritual recovery got me to where I went to a state office to get me off that disability. And after testing, they got, you know, I wanted to go to for some extra training at the place where they sent me, and the place said, no, we cannot accept you. We're not accepting any more of these clients. And I was very disappointed. But it got me someplace else, only for 11 weeks of some training. I said, what am I going to learn in 11 weeks? And at least to myself, what am I going to learn in just 11 weeks? And there was a little voice in the back of my head that says, take it. You won't be sorry. You won't be sorry. And I did it. We went through the training, and we went through the job skills also. And, you know, they tell you about job hunting and the whole bit. I revised my resume. And based on that dinky job that I had before with the payroll, they got me into an internship with the payroll department of a major hospital. And I went through the entire thing, and towards the end, I started making plans. I wanted to stay there. And the director was asking me, well, now that you're coming back today, what do you want to do? I said, I'd like to stay here. I know you have a customer service job open. I'd like to be able to stay here, or if that doesn't work out, whatever else is here within the hospital. And sure enough, I met with him and then the manager on Monday, and they made me a formal job offer. The job was turning perfect. I didn't even have to go on job hunting. And that was such a gift. But while now the spots were taken, I was a little disappointed. They started teaching me another job, which is just as stressful as the first job. But then one day, when I was on the phone, the director says, come in, I want to talk to you. And he says, I've seen you on the phone, and people have told me how good you are with the phone, and I now see, and I was a little short-sighted. There's one customer service spot open. Do you want it? And that's exactly what I wanted. That higher power gave me that. He really didn't offer me the job. It was my higher power that did that. And I got the job. And I got the job to where I was able to go up to HR, and they said, well, we'll have to talk to the department. I said, no, the department already made me the offer. And I became permanent. Now, this was 5 years ago. And the job has been stressful. I've had my issues with the job, with the performance plan and everything else. But that level of recovery and the level of honesty, of looking at myself, you know, the steps told me, take a good look at yourself, be honest, try and handle that program-wise, and, you know, just be honest, admit to your mistakes. And that's exactly what I've done. And they know I'm in program. I've done just that. And it's probably saved my job because it was a major screw-up with a confidentiality with a W-2, and I'm still there. And it works. But it's worked. So I'm still there, and they know I'm in program. They ask questions. They see what I'm doing. Although, you know, they don't understand it perfectly, it's there. But now I'm starting to take on more service where somebody planted a seed that said, there's a world service spot open for a delegate. Do you want it? I started to think about it more and more. The more I thought about it, the more it played on me that I wanted it. And I was able to go out to World Service 3 years ago for the first time, and it was the best experience that I've had for a higher level. You know, I've been on the service, along with the plan of eating now, are the two tools I've used the most. And it's the service that has got me to stick around and to do things. You know, like Andrea said, I've been out to a hospital to visit somebody, you know, who's suffering. The person more than me was suffering from the obesity. He was somewhere between 700 and 800 pounds. And unfortunately, you know, I tried to get there and do help him. Unfortunately, he never made it out. And I kept thinking, what did I do wrong? But it was nothing that I did wrong. I was doing what I was supposed to, but you can't always control the outcome. As much as I'd like, I want to control the outcome. But you can't always do that. You can't always do that. And these days, I've taken on post and intergroup, you know, with a corresponding secretary. I was vice chair for a while. I've done the publications, and I'm on the retreat committee. And I use this to stick around and to do service wherever I'm asked. So when, you know, the minute somebody says, can you speak? I don't think about it. I just say yes. It's an automatic reflex. And I'm not doing anything about it because it's keeping me here. It's keeping me here. And I was reading in one of the readings today, and it said, and there was a quote that said, "It says true freedom is to share all the chains our brothers have with our brothers, and without and with heart and hand to be the easiest to make others free. And that's exactly what it does. If I give away the program, I'm getting back just as much, if not more. And I've learned that. I'm always there, and I'm always willing to do the service. The steps have been a good guidance for me. You know, I have been able to work through them formally. It's there. I have trouble putting them down on paper, but I now have a sponsor that I at least talk to about, and I do it that way, because that's the best for me. But the steps have been ingrained in me, and I do it, and I'm conscious of it. And I'm getting more and more into a little bit of prayer and meditation. Occasionally on the run, I take a little time for myself. I give a little prayer out when I get stressed out. And the job now that I have is very stressful, but it's nothing to what it was before. And the best thing is, I'm now ready to take on another venture for my personal life. The last week was the first time that I set foot in a college classroom in many, many years. And I'm going back for my degree. I'm taking advantage of the fact my employer is paying the entire bill. The tuition, the fees, and I'm surprised, even the books. And I'm taking advantage of that. And I'm going back. I have concentration problems, but I'll work at it. Program says to work at it as the best that you can. That's exactly what I'm doing. You know, and OA has given me back a life. It's not perfect. I mean, I'll always, you know, I'll never be fully recovered. I'll always have the food issues. I am in recovery, and that's exactly the way it's going to stay. I've had a weight loss of a little over 350 pounds. I'm learning to live life in a new body. I feel like a child with a new toy, because I'm finally able to, you know, I have to learn how to dress myself to get clothes, because I never had choices before as far as different clothes, or even where do I go for clothes? And now I can go walk into any place and buy clothing, and that's new, and it's a nice kind of stress. That's what this program has given to me. And that's exactly why I intend to give back. You know, I show my appreciation by giving back whatever I get from it. And even with interest, I'm willing to do that. Okay. So I'd like to leave everybody here, and thank everybody for letting me speak. Thank you.